Hey, this is Dr. Nick and Andrew Datto, and we're just about to start Get a Freaking Life. Welcome to this episode.
It's always a good idea to turn the spotlight back onto yourself, especially when you're asking other people for their big moments, moments worth it, knowing our own. So my name's Andrew Datto with Dr. Nick Lucas. Nick, you're the idea and the brain behind Get a Freaking Life.
That's very gracious of you.
Hardly. Why don't we find out a little bit about you? What's your background? I mean, why Get a Freaking Life? What's the rub?
People, when they get a freaking life, are just happier and healthier. They are doing what they want to do. They're not spending emotional energy trying to ignore the things that they want to do while they're busy doing what they don't want to do. So Get a Freaking Life is just, it's inspiring. You know, I'm inspired. I know that you're inspired by people who have unlikely success, or they had an idea and they ran with it. I mean, they're the things that stories are made of, movies are made of. And
so you're after mountain climbers, and it's not.
Well, mountain climbers, even metaphorically, like anyone who climbs a mountain in their life, you know, has an idea, are up against an obstacle, achieve it. It's inspiring. And when I hear those stories, they make me reflect on my life and think, you know, what am I doing? Am I on track? Have I been lazy? Am I going for it? Like, we've only got so much time on this planet. Let's get a freaking life while we're here.
Okay. How long have you been thinking about the idea?
Well, it's always been on my mind. Always been on my mind. You know, when you're growing up as a kid, you have these incredible aspirations for yourself. And I guess, you know, the groundwork for that was laid by my dad, who you know, he brought me up with this idea that I was here for a reason. Now I think that that's my reason. I make what that reason is. But it kind of gives you this sense of, you know, you want to do something important with your life. So that's what this is all about.
So what was your dad? He was one of those, you know, get out there, son, and kick 10 goals. Or was he? What sort of dad was he?
He's a quietly spoken dad. He's not a big rah-rah dad. But, like, you know, as we get into the story, my dad's a minister.
Right.
So because he's got this very strong faith, you know, he kind of believes that we're all here for this purpose and we need to find out what that purpose is and live it.
And for him, was it always that you're here for the higher purpose?
For a higher purpose.
Right. For the God higher purpose?
Well, for him it was, yeah.
Okay, but did he say that to you?
Absolutely.
Right. And do you still follow that?
Well, I have a different idea about things now.
Yeah.
But you can't throw the baby out with the bathwater. There's still some really important lessons and influences that he had, you know, and making the most of the time that you've got here to get a freaking life, that's what it's really all about. So as a kid, I remember thinking about that, going through high school, thinking about what I wanted to do. I mean, really, it's this whole idea, and I think a lot of people have this. Of course, it's a common experience, but then at some point they lose their way. Whatever it is about life guides them into not getting a freaking life.
Okay. Do you think the reason that you want to do this, I mean, you've thought about it all the time, but the reason you want to do it now is because you're 40-something, what are you, 40?
43.
All right, so you're perfect. You've got it.
That's right.
It's all lining up now. So you're 43 years old. You've decided, God, I just want more. I mean, I know you've done different jobs. I mean, I don't know what your school life was like. Did you finish school and straight A student? Because I know you ended up in the medical...
Flunked out of school. Well, I didn't flunk out of school, but I dropped out of school at the end of year 11 before completing the HSC. I went off to go and be a muso. So,
see, then that must have been the moment your dad was so proud. Go, just follow those. Was he? I mean, what did your dad do then?
You know what? He was supportive. If that's the decision you're going to make,
yeah,
go make it. I mean, he dropped out of school when he was 14 and got a job in the building industry. So,
right.
You know.
So you reckon he honestly looked at you and said,
yeah,
go for
it. He's always had ultimate faith that it's all going to be okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you dropped out of school, but then you ended up in medical research. So that's a fairly big shift from being a muso. What sort of music? You should do our music for this, by the way.
Oh, I should.
I've thought about it. So, right. Okay.
Oh, it was kind of funky jazz rock stuff.
Yeah.
You know, combined with a bit of garage band.
You're just after girls, weren't you?
Yeah. and it worked.
Right.
It worked because I met this girl who's my wife, has been for over 20 years. And it was at that point when I began to get really serious about her that I thought, hang on, I can't just be this muso. See, I was a pop star. You need to know that. I mean, not many people knew, just about 6 or 7 people. But I thought I needed to get something a bit more, you know, sustainable.
Yeah.
And that's when I decided to go back to university. I had to go back to TAFE to finish school, to get my HSC, which is what you had to do, it was called back then.
Yeah.
And, you know, I discovered that I could learn. I didn't know that before. Right. I found school hard.
Yeah.
And I discovered I could learn, and I actually ended up being pretty good at it. So
That put you into, what was your first thing out of uni? You went straight into medical?
I did biomedical research. I then went and qualified as an osteopath. I then went and did pain medicine and pain research. And
so what's pain? Yeah. What's pain research mean? Is that,
well, you know, the nitty gritty was pain? Yeah, I actually injected people with painful substances.
And like what? Like
hypertonic saline, it is. It's a salty solution. You put it into their muscle, it really hurts.
Yeah.
And then you can ask them to give you feedback about what it feels like, and you can measure their brain patterns and stuff like that. Just trying to understand pain, you know, in that level, a whole lot of levels. I mean, studying pain is a fascinating thing because it gives you, like, this reason to study so many aspects of human behavior, how we think, what we do.
So how can you apply what you learned with pain? Obviously, you learned some things.
I learned a few things.
If it hurts, it hurts, right? Is that the fact? Is it that, you know, if you stub your toe, you've stubbed your toe, and...
Well, if you stub your toe, you've stubbed your toe. You perceive the pain down in the toe.
Yeah.
The fact is, though, that you are actually... Your brain is creating that experience. So you feel it in your brain. It's just like you don't see with your eyes. The eyes are just the antenna. You know, you see with your brain. You smell with your brain. You taste with your brain. And you feel pain with your brain.
Right.
So there's a lot of things about pain that we used to believe that all turned out to be completely wrong. And that's one of the big lessons that apply right across life. You know, you have to be prepared that what you think actually might not be the case. And when you're open to that, that's when real lessons happen. Because
And that's what you can pass on to anyone else when dealing with, when sort of taking those lessons into get a freaking life as well. You know, sometimes the purple flowers aren't necessarily purple flowers.
Well,
if you know what I mean.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, what people think are possible is based on their current understanding. And it could just take one idea or meeting one person for all of a sudden what was impossible to become possible.
Okay. So, and just back to the pain thing, which is, I mean, you've got kids, I've got kids. So pain management for your children, like, do you say to them, oh, look, I know, I can see that toenail's hanging off. It doesn't, I'm sure it hurts, but... Like, do you try and kid them that things don't hurt?
I mean, first thing, always validate the pain.
Yeah.
But then don't, what we call...
Like, in what way?
Like, say, you know, say, wow, I can see that must really hurt. Or, yes, I've had that happen. That really hurts.
Yeah.
But do it with a smile.
Yeah.
Don't, like, freak out. Because what they're doing is they're looking at your face, literally. And they're doing this subconsciously, right? And they are determining, like, they're thinking, how am I going to react based on what they see on your face? So if you're freaking out, they think... I need to freak out, right? And by the way, when they freak out, it actually hurts more.
Yeah.
Right? When they're calm and they're relaxed, it actually doesn't hurt as much. So you're doing them a favor, even if it is like a really bad thing.
Yeah.
You're doing them a favor to keep calm and to show nice emotions on your face.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so the kid's got a splinter and you go near their foot and they start wailing because it's perceived.
Yeah.
What do you do then?
Oh, you just... You know, it depends.
Well, you know, under theory, not what do you do, but with the theory.
Yeah. Well, again, it's validating it.
Yeah.
Explaining that it's not as bad as it is. You know, it's being calm and relaxing. And, you know, if they're really freaked out about it, then you don't want to freak them out anymore. So, you know, if they're sitting there hovering in the corner, you know, then you've got to let them kind of work through that. But it's all about being calm.
Yeah.
And relaxed and telling them it's going to be okay.
Okay, and so this is definitely the same thing in all aspects of life as well. You just take that same lesson, I'm guessing, to try and be calm and relaxed. And
well, you know, like if you're stressed out, like overly stressed out, it's very hard to think straight. It's very hard to come up with new ideas.
Yeah.
And that's why you've got to try and maintain that kind of calm approach. I don't mean calm and totally relaxed and chilled out, but calm as in not freaking out.
Okay, so... Let me ask you this. Why get a freaking life? What's your hope for it? Are you hoping to help other people? I mean,
absolutely.
Given that medical sort of, and your father, you know, your parental background, or is it as much about, you know, getting Nick Lucas to get a freaking life as well?
Well, it's both things. I mean, by doing this with you, this is fun. Yeah. This is my idea of getting a freaking life. And we're going to get to talk to all these incredible people who, you know, you'd never normally come across and discover their story and get inspired by their story and maybe help them out as well. And then the people listening to this, again, if they find any sense of inspiration or motivation around what they might be able to do, if it triggers them and helps them in their life get a freaking life, then that's the whole point. So it's a win-win all around, because I've just met hundreds and hundreds of people who aren't doing this. You know, they get sidetracked and they're doing something that's mundane. It's a rat race. It's over and over. They don't want to do it. And they don't really even entertain the idea that they could maybe shift.
They don't know how to shift. They don't know how to.
Yeah. They don't know what's possible. Often they haven't met people who... Well, and look, and this definitely isn't about here is the way to do it. Because someone might get a freaking life in a corporate setting. They might get a freaking life at the beach or whatever it is they do. But the whole point is chase it. Do it. Yeah. You know.
So let's talk to enough people to offer enough alternatives, whether they be teachers or manufacturers or people who run golf courses. And well, it doesn't matter what it is, does it? It's all just looking at a new window into life, into other people's lives and saying, well, maybe I can borrow that little bit of that and that bit of that.
You never know which story is going to resonate with the right person. So the more stories we create, the more we uncover and the more we publish this, then the more likely we're going to have a big impact. And that's what's really exciting.
Yeah. Saving the world. One freaking laugh at a time.
You got it.
Good stuff. All right. Thanks, Nick. Good luck.
Thank you. Okay, so now we're turning the tables and we're going to find out from Andrew all about Get a Freaking Life and what on earth he's doing on this podcast and what he hopes to achieve with it and all that good stuff. So welcome, Andrew. It's your turn.
Thanks, Nick.
So tell me, why Get a Freaking Life for you?
Oh, look. I met this guy in a cafe, right? I'm sitting there minding, like I've done a lot of different things, but I spend a lot of time writing, so articles or, you know, blogs or kids' books. And I go to this cafe and there's this bloke who does the same thing, which is you, of course, and you're doing your work, I do mine. Eventually we sort of chat and then there's, he said something, I said, I'd like to do a podcast. And you go, yeah, I want to do a podcast. And I've always wanted to do a podcast. I don't actually even care what it was about. I just wanted to really do one. And then you said the idea, Get a Freaking Life. And the one thing I've enjoyed more than anything else professionally is talking to people on the radio. And it wasn't called Get a Freaking Life. It was called The Evening Show on the ABC, on ABC Radio. But it's exactly the same thing. Talk to interesting people about their lives and what makes them tick, and with the hope that you might be able to glean something as a listener from somebody else and go, that's a great idea, I would like to do that. And I like the idea of not having to work normally, but to work abnormally, constructively, to my own terms.
So is this how you'd say you've got yourself a freaking life?
Yeah, but it's by design, because you know, just can't. What I do, it's not normal work, you know. It's hard for my parents to understand. It's hard for, not hard for my family because we're all the same. But for my friends who are lawyers or, you know, medical people or whatever they are, business people, accountants, they just go, well, God, what do you do? But I know it just seems to work. I mean, I feel quite lucky that I have a...
Well, you've had an adventure.
Oh, yeah. Look, I saw a clairvoyant when I was 18. I don't believe in it, by the way. I'm not sure I believe. Well, just a little fence sitting there. And she said, you're going to travel the world at someone else's expense, right? When I was 18, I went, yeah, that's great. And I've literally traveled the world. You know, I lived in America twice, once for MTV, and did that, you know, New York City for a year as a 21 or 22-year-old. Hilarious. How much fun is that?
Yeah.
And then did the great outdoors. I travel for conferences. So, you know, so I've seen the world at someone else's expense. And that really is, that's a life. That's, I don't want to brag. You just sound like a jerk.
But like going along that, at any point were you thinking, okay, this is going to come to an end and I'm going to have to go back to some kind of normal?
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. So that's the whole, and that's what I like about this idea is that, I've lived in not fear. I mean, fear would be another... Yeah, I could look at it as fear, but in, you know, a vague concern as to how am I going to continue to operate and obviously make money. And so it's about diversifying. It's always, you know, so I worked just on TV and then I started... What did I do after that? I've tried film, I've done stage, I write. As I said, you know, I've written 20-something books for kids. So you've always got to find a different way to... different way to make money to survive, and that's part of getting a freaking life. Just got to survive. I've got three kids. I've got a wife. I've got a mortgage. I've got cars. I've got, you know, it goes on and on. Same as everyone else. So the idea is just to survive and pay for it all and enjoy it as opposed to just flog myself stupid in a way I don't really want to, so I can still have all those things but be miserable. I'd rather work in a way that's vaguely enjoyable and still have those things. That's the dream. Doesn't always work out, but that's the overarching dream.
So in your travels then and in your adventure, are most of the people that you've, you know, worked with and associated with, do they fall into the same category? They're doing what you're doing? Or do you mostly come across people who...
Yeah, I just think a lot of the people who really inspire me work exactly this. A lot of speakers. There's a lot of speakers, and what they do is they go and speak and tell their story. And sometimes the stories are fantastic, and sometimes they're exactly the same as they were the last time. There's one speaker who's just quite brilliant, and I've heard him speak 5 times, and word for word, literally word for word, joke for joke, comma for comma. And the last time I saw him, there was 2 American guys there, and they went, "Oh man, he was amazing. Oh my God, such a story, such a..." And to tell it so emotively, and I said, "He's great." I said, "He does it exactly the same every time." And they went, "No." And they were devastated. They thought that he was speaking just to them. And he was.
Which is a great skill.
It's a great skill to have.
Yeah.
But it was interesting, their reaction going, "What?" I mean, I know I have the same jokes that I tell, so I'm not a comedian, though.
So how much of what you're doing now then has been a result of, do you think, of you continually meeting people who are getting their freaking life, who are living life on their terms?
I don't know. I mean, like, you know, working with cameramen and soundies and directors and producers. People like that, they just work from job to job. And so it's, you work with people like that often enough and long enough, that's just how you work. That's life. I mean, my wife works, so that's, you know, that's good. But when I meet people and they say certain things, like there's a speaker in the UK called Deborah Searle who talks about rowing a boat across the Atlantic. And, you know, I thought I've heard a lot of stories, but the one thing she said as she nearly gave up was that her twin sister called her and said to her, "You know, you've got to choose your attitude." Now, this is 45 minutes into a one-hour presentation, and she just set it up beautifully. So for me to just drop that line in is unfair. But she said, "Choose your attitude. You don't have to wake up in the morning and be grumpy. You don't have to make it that someone sort of has parked you and you have to do 4-point turn as opposed to a 2-point turn to get out. That doesn't have to ruin your day. You can choose the attitude that you move on with from any situation." And I just went, "Oh," and that changed.
Has that changed?
Oh, like, my, changed my life.
Right.
Like amazingly.
See, that's an example then, right now.
Yeah.
One story.
One thing. And so that's the idea for that's what I would like to get out of the podcast, is that we talk to people and they just say one thing that will resonate with 1 or 2 people, or maybe 100 people, or maybe 1,000 people, but they go, "Oh my God, that's us. I could do, I mean, really." Choose your attitude. It's amazing.
So I'm interested then, have you put that concept through any of your children's books?
No. No, but I should. I hadn't seen. Now, that's the thing. I haven't actually thought about, I haven't even thought of it. That's interesting you say that. But, gee, it's a great idea.
Better write that down. Because I'm thinking, like, as a parent with my kids, I've read them so many books,
yeah.
and there's some books that teach these lessons
that
resonate with the kids, and they're going to take them with them for the rest of their lives. Like, and that's what you do. Like, that's the reach you've had.
Oh,
you
know, I know.
You've sold more than, you know, 10 books, haven't you? So
yeah, but people don't understand. Like, I don't understand what I'm doing if I write a book. So I've got a new book coming out for next year, or for the start of the school year, called First Day, about a kid's first day at school. So it's just basically going through the planning of the first day. I've got a friend who's just been diagnosed with cancer, and she saw the book and looked at it, and I said, "Oh, look, you can keep it if you like." And she said, "Well, it's just, I know it's supposed to be about a girl going to school, but it's actually about, this is my life now, is that I've just had my first day and my life now moves in a different direction than I thought, and I will need to be a bit brave, and I will need to have you know, and there's a line about hair and, you know, I'm going, it's fantastic and it's amazing. So you write something, you don't really know where it's going to end up. I've got a book called Check On Me about the last things that happened before bedtime that is used as a text for damaged kids, teenagers. But it's a picture book. You go, how could they? And then the woman who has sort of been pushing it, it says that it's you want damaged kids to know that they're safe even when they're sleeping, and this is a pretty book to do that. So
that's awesome.
It's amazing. So it's life-changing. So I know I've been lucky to, you know, write something because, you know, my five-year-old says, Daddy, don't forget to check on me, but I don't understand the reach that it has. Mm. So my hope with this show is that we can hit people sometimes gently, sometimes whack them in the solar plexus and, you know, give them a kick up the date and off they go and find something to actually enjoy their lives in a way that they probably didn't think was possible. So it's not a big, it's not a hallelujah moment, but it could be if they're listening the right way.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, thanks for sharing.
Yeah, no worries. Let's get into it.
Yeah, let's do.